He kōna i purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Nau mai, haere mai. It's great to have your company today for Country Life. I'm Sally Round.
And I'm Duncan Smith. Kia ora. How would you like a job in the dairy industry? Today we talk to workers who've switched from quite different careers and now love the farming life.
In the 90s file, we speak to a young man keen to tell stories about farming and its people, despite ructions in the media landscape.
We also visit a free-range chook farm in Leeston, and later on, a farmer tells us why she prefers home kill on the farm to sending her cattle to an abattoir. But first, to conditions around the country. In Northland, farmers have had to get their wet weather gear out this week, as for the last 5 days it has absolutely hosed down. Our contact around Kaipara says the area received 55 to 60 millimetres of rain, and the local farmers are grinning ear to ear. The Coomera harvest wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. Our contact says the red variety harvest is down about 10% and the orange down 20%.
Mild temperatures and around 40 millimetres of rain this week around Pukekohe mean crops are growing quickly along with the grass. Early onions are up and away. The main crop, Pukekohe long keeper onions, will start to be sown next week. After a flush of brassica harvesting, supplies are expected to be lighter in 2 weeks' time. Pukekohe growers are very worried about the possibility of oversupplied frozen European potato fries being imported.
Waikato also had a welcome start to the week with 10 millimetres of rain. The mornings are chillier now, and the farmer we spoke to says he's on to winter jobs such as fencing and cleaning out the calf shed. A unit load of straw bales arrived from Manawatū this week to help with extra feed during calving.
Down in the King Country, mild weather has been a welcome respite from the frosts last week. Late mating is coming to an end, and the first of the early scanning will begin next week. There's also a bit of pre-lambing shearing going on. There have been a couple of good frosts this week in Taranaki, with fine days to follow. Some rain is forecast for the weekend. The ag consultant we spoke to told us that despite the dry summer, the region's well-placed heading into the winter. Good grass-growing weather earlier in May allowed farmers to build up some good pasture cover. Most farmers have dried the cows off and production will be on par, if not better, than last year.
Over in the Bay of Plenty, the weather has been beautiful. The region has recovered well from the dry, but there's still a need for good rainfall to fill up the streams and wells that are still well down. This weekend, the local Young Farmers Club are going around picking up surplus balage and straw bales and taking them to drought-stricken farmers in Hawke's Bay. On the East Cape around Gisborne, the weather has also been fine and a nice respite from the last 10 days of bitterly cold weather. The region is looking okay going into winter, but some areas still need good rain. Ewe scanning is underway. The local sale yards had a cattle sale last week. Stock in good condition sold well, but others were heavily discounted. The lamb schedule is holding up surprisingly well, given the circumstances.
In Hawke's Bay, the farmer we spoke to says he's had 60 millimetres of rain, but it was patchy, and significantly more is needed across the region to make a difference. Farmers are still busy feeding out and trying to build grass cover up before winter really hits. The farmer says he's not had a chance to look at the fresh water reforms released by the government this week. It's the least of anyone's worries at the moment. One badly hit family we're in touch with has taken the chance to head away for a well-deserved break from feeding out and financial worries due to drought. Down the road in Wairarapa, farmers woke up to a hard frost on Friday morning. The rest of the week has been grey and drizzly, which made for some perfect duck shooting weather. The farmer we spoke to says that they have trade lambs, ones they've just bought in, on the farm at the moment, and they're getting into winter mode. Grass response is still a bit slow, but the region has recovered from what was a pretty hard summer.
Our contact over in Manawatū received 30 millimetres of rain to start the week, and pasture is still growing. He dried the cows off earlier this week and is on to farm maintenance. He's going to be enjoying a bit of quiet time this long weekend. And over the Cook Strait, pruning started in orchards in the Nelson Motueka region. People are also pulling up apple trees and getting the ground fumigated in preparation for new varieties of rootstock that will get planted in early spring. The pulled-up trees are burnt on site, and our contact says because it's not windy, the smoke clouds are hanging around for longer than usual.
Parts of Marlborough had a good dose of rain last weekend, but on the east coast around the Seddon and Flaxmere areas, it remains very dry. On farms, stock are getting a daily feed of baleage and silage. The farmer at Havelock says soil temperatures are above 10 degrees, so grass growth is doing okay on breaks. In the provinces, vineyard pruning's underway. Welcome rain fell across the Canterbury region at the start of the week. The mountains are now covered in snow and it's been frosty on the plains. Farmers are getting into winter mode with cattle and sheep starting on winter feed crops. Cropping farmers are hoping to get a final winter wheat crop sown in the next few days.
A farmer at Lake Brunner on the west coast was in the shed administering antibiotic dry cow treatment when we spoke to him. This is to treat for any intramammary infections contracted during lactation and provides protection against new infections during the dry period. He says the weather's been great this week for drying off the herd. Central Otago got down to a chilly -7 this week and there's been no rain for ages, so the hill country's drying out. Farmers have really appreciated what shearers have done over the lockdown to get the crutching done, as well as trimming the long wool on Merino's sheep's heads so they don't go blind over winter. And a wee reminder, the Brass Monkey Motorcycle Rally at Oturehua that normally takes place over Queen's Birthday weekend has been postponed until next year. So the farmer who owns the land where it's held says, please don't turn up.
It's been a splendid week weather-wise in Southland. Most dairy farmers have already dried off or are in the process of doing so. Our contact who farms at Blackmount wants to give a big thumbs up to the local freezing work staff. He says that despite working under difficult conditions during the lockdown, they're nearly back to full speed for lamb processing. He got 30 bulls away this week and says there's still a bit of backlog for cattle and culled cows.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
Lately we've been chatting to people born in the 90s who are working in the primary sector, or planning to. Riley Kennedy is quite a bit younger than those we've profiled so far. He was born in 2001. We've got to know him quite well, as he's been getting some work experience here at Country Life.
Hi, I'm Riley Kennedy and we're here in the agricultural town of Fielding.
You born and bred here, Riley?
No, I'm an Ashburton boy in heart, but I've lived here most of my life.
Tell us what you're studying.
I'm studying a diploma in journalism at Wintec in Hamilton.
What sort of journalism are you interested in?
Agricultural journalism mainly. There's a real story to be told in agricultural journalism. It's a very niche market and it interests me hugely. I think our stories need to be told from a very neutral point of view. Like at the moment it's either bad or you've got someone that wants to beat the drum. I think it needs to be neutral and taking everyone's point of view, but there's a real story to be told on the land, and that's why I love it. A while ago I wrote a story about the rural urban divide, and at the time I thought that there was a really rural urban divide, we need to tell our story better, but I actually think that the urban sector respects us more, and I think it's more the farmers that need to be, or the agricultural sector needs to be more open to sharing our story, and not every time a microphone's put in front of them they think, oh, it's all about the environment, it's those bloody greenies and the vegans. But I think we need to be telling our story well, and that's sort of what I want to do.
And have you seen some stories you've got your eye on that you'd like to cover?
Yep. I'd love to get out to some of the Chatham Islands and get out there and really tell the true heart of what rural New Zealand is. We hear from Federated Farmers and Dairy NZ, all their leaders, but not that it's a bad thing, but I think that we need to actually be going to real farmers that get up every day and produce our food and get their point of view and, tell their story.
It's a pretty tough time to be getting into journalism.
Yeah, well, it's not great, it's not ideal, but it will get better. It might be a tough slog for a few years, but I'm sure it will come right. I am quite optimistic about what's to come. I think with the rise in digital, everyone has a platform now, so I think there's a real opportunity there for the whole primary sector to be telling its story through those platforms, not just through mainstream media anymore. And that's what I've set out to do, and is help the sector tell its story.
Riley Kennedy.
Troy Prendergast and his partner Brogan White have a small family farm overlooking Te Waihora Lake Ellesmere near Leeston in Canterbury. They have some beef cattle and pigs, but their main focus is producing free-range eggs. Cosmo Kentish Barnes visited the farm to find out more.
We've been currently farming this property for about coming up 3 years. We purchased the centre of the farm off my parents who retired their dairy farm.
And what's your background, Troy? Were you brought up on this farm?
Yes, I was, yep. So we moved here about 20-odd years ago, went to school locally here, did an engineering apprenticeship up the road at Springston Engineering. So, yeah, sort of been here the whole life.
Did you ever consider taking over the dairy farm?
Yeah, we hummed and hawed about it. It just wasn't really big enough to support sort of two families, so my parents have sort of retired the dairy farm and they just sort of run dry stock and beef and sold us the end part of the farm.
Is it a good life living out here?
Oh, we love it. Yeah, the kids are on farm every day with us. It's just a family business and, yeah, it's great. It doesn't really feel like you're at work, to be honest with you.
Why eggs? Why chickens?
It was something that we could do on a commercial scale without a huge amount of land, which obviously farming's pretty hard to get into. The price of land. So here we can sort of go up to 9,000 free-range birds on 11 hectares.
You also have an engineering business. Tell me about that.
We've been doing that for about since 2012. We were pretty heavily involved in agriculture engineering and we've just sort of kept our existing engineering customers and haven't really grown that side of it because obviously the farm's sort of taken off and requires a fair bit of attention.
Quite handy to have those engineering skills though for developing the poultry farm, I guess.
Yeah, it means we can do everything on farm and we can do everything ourselves and keep the costs down.
What's your bread and butter sort of engineering work?
Dairy shed maintenance and repairs and a lot of servicing over winter when all the dairy farmers dry off. Yeah.
So in terms of your farming clients, things are ticking along okay despite the lockdown?
Yeah, just keeping social distancing in mind when meeting on farm, but apart from that, it's pretty much stayed the same for us anyway.
Now, we are standing in between two of your large laying sheds, and you made these yourselves.
Yes, everything was built on farm.
The eggs have literally fallen out right beside us. It's a very easy way of collecting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just a roll-away system. So they just lay their eggs, and then they roll out from under them, so they can't sort of tamper with them and get them dirty and things like that.
Do you need to have some sort of grading system for the eggs or grading machine?
So we have a processing line. So they get fed in one end, they're washed, dried, candled, stamped and then graded at the other end. So, yeah, it's a pretty fancy bit of kit.
Well, let's walk on down and have a look at your chickens because a lot of them are out in the paddock. And as the crow flies, we're not that far from the lake, are we?
No. So we've only got dock land behind us, and then it's obviously the lakefront, yeah.
Oh, now we can see the chickens here. Our listeners can probably hear them, and they're lovely-looking chicks, aren't they?
Yep, we've two breeds. We have brown shavers and highlines.
So how many eggs can one of these chickens lay in a week?
About six eggs a week, yep. There will be seven at the start, and then just as they get a wee bit older, it sort of drops down to six. So we just keep them on a 16-hour day with artificial lighting in the sheds, which sort of doesn't let them go into a molt for that first year.
And what's your daily routine? What are you up to today?
So we're on eggs today. So you can hear Brogan collecting eggs in the background. So, yeah, it's basically get up, first collection, and then we'll run the egg processing line, clean and pack all those eggs, and then we'll come back and do another collection. And that's pretty much it. We'll check the feed levels, check the bird health, have a walk through all the sheds, and then we'll get into other farm work. We're just doing a bit of paddock work and things like that at the moment.
And when do these eggs get delivered?
So they'll get delivered first thing tomorrow morning, and then they'll get processed and probably delivered to like supermarket shelves tomorrow afternoon. So they'll be sort of less than 24 hours old.
Was it challenging getting into supermarkets? Because obviously there's a bit of competition, isn't there?
So we supply a wholesaler who's in the supermarkets. So he's well established in the supermarkets. So yeah, he does a lot of the grunt work for us. So it's a combination between us and about three other farms.
Oh, so is it another brand that you supply to?
Yes. Yeah,
Yep. Well, that makes it easier for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was good getting started. Obviously, to supply the supermarket, you've got to have a certain number because they don't want bare shelves sort of half the week. So, yeah, it was good to get a foot in the door with him, and it's our bread and butter, basically.
Yeah, and do you have your own brand for home sales as well?
Yes, we do, yeah. We're the old-fashioned Egg Co. So we sort of farm with three avenues of purchasing our eggs. One is cafes and restaurants. We've got wholesale and home deliveries as well. So the other two have picked up, yes, which has compensated for the other one being down. And the cafes that we do supply have diversified a little bit with doing meals and things like that. So, yeah, I can't really complain about that. You know, we haven't had surplus of eggs, put it that way.
Have you had to use social media a bit to develop new markets while the lockdown is in place?
Yes, yeah, we use social media for advertising our home deliveries and things like that. Yeah, everyone's sort of been at home on social, so it's worked out really well. And we've just sort of completing our website at the moment, and then you can subscribe to a monthly newsletter to keep up to date with what we're doing on farm, a lot of photos and stuff like that, so they can see that we are true free range and 24-hour access to the range. It's a lot of work. Brogan handles most of it. She's pretty good with it. So, but yeah, I guess people just want that contact and know where their food comes from these days.
Troy Prendergast there from the Old Fashioned Egg Company near Leeston.
I'm John Whittaker, the flower man from Fielding, and you're listening to Country Life, the RNZ National.
With the large numbers losing their jobs because of COVID-19, Dairy New Zealand has launched a publicity campaign to encourage people to consider changing careers and getting into dairy farming. Susan Murray has been finding out more.
Radio New Zealand News at 5. Morena, I'm Vicky Mackay. Good morning. Netball New Zealand's chief executive, Jenny Wiley, has described it as heartening that the government...
Dairy farmers, we know, start their days early. What a turn-off.
A couple of the negatives with dairying, the hours, having to get up pretty early, how's that?
I think as long as you're okay waking up in the morning, and that's if you're someone that wakes up at 10:30 or 12 on a normal day, then you're going to struggle. But you probably struggle in every industry, to be honest.
If you love the job, listen up. I was at university and I had 3 classes a week. None of them started before 11 o'clock. And I could not make those lectures. I did not enjoy what I was doing. I can wake up here at 3:30 in the morning and come to work. I'm tired sometimes, but, you know, we get a weekend off and you recharge.
And it's seasonal, so, you know, there are times of year. Calving is a big one, and that was when I was coming into farming. Everyone said, oh, God, if you survive calving, you'll be okay. And I had this expectation that I was going to, you know, be on my last legs by the end of it. And it wasn't easy, but certainly it wasn't as hard as I was expecting it to be. Another great thing about farming that often gets overlooked is that, yeah, you're up early, but it also means you're going home to your house, and I can't tell you how nice it is to be able to go home and sit there and have a nice long breakfast at home.
To be honest, I don't think it's as crazy hours as everyone sort of makes it out to be. Like, it's persistent, which is probably the hardest part. Like, it's
looking back when I started, the hours and the expectation, I guess, you know, only 7 years ago, it's totally changed now. If you're not looking after your employees, if they're not in a workplace that's enjoyable, they're going to leave. When they leave, that's a massive hole to fill. We've got a really good team here, so I'm trying to do everything I can to make sure that they're happy in their role.
And being happy in their role means Dana gets to pick the music in the milking parlour. But we have to meet them properly. They're all career changes. That is, they started out doing something totally different and changed to dairy farming. They're on a 1,000 cow farm in Eastern Bay of Plenty, about 40 minutes east of Tauranga.
Thomas Chatfield, I'm a contract milker here. 6 years dairy farming.
Dana Rowe, I'm a dairy assistant.
Tim Wilson, I'm a farm assistant here.
Before this, I was a physio. And I switched, there wasn't really any thought given to it, but I had a friend who needed a hand, and I didn't have a job at the time. I was looking at going overseas, heading to Australia, so I figured why not give it a shot, and then kind of fell in love with the job after starting, I guess. Yeah.
I was studying a Bachelor in Performing Arts, and Thomas needed a hand over the summer. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just do that in the university break. And then a staff member left here and I never went back to university. And I'm still here 3 years later.
You miss university?
Not at all. I hated being in the city.
I was a strength and conditioning coach for 6 years.
You had a degree in...
degree in sports science and a postgrad diploma in strength and conditioning, and was halfway through my master's as well, and then sort of realised wasn't really the future I wanted for myself and the family, and started talking and found out you could come into dairy late and there was support for you and a pathway, so we just took the plunge.
And so it wasn't a difficult decision for any of you to make?
No, not at all. I mean, I had nothing to lose. I wasn't working at the time, and it was an opportunity, and I thought... I didn't want to look back and, you know, years down the line and go, man, I wish I'd given that a shot.
From a farm?
No, not at all. And Tim and I are both city boys. Dana grew up rural. But, I love the idea of being outside. So thought I'd give it a crack and it stuck.
I grew up on the farm, but I was always going to be a superstar. And Mum and Dad kept on saying, you know, you should go farming, because I loved working on the farm with my dad on the weekends. But I was like, oh my gosh, no, I'm not going farming. I'm going to be a superstar. And then I came and actually gave farming a crack on my own terms and love everything about farming.
It took me about an hour to make up my mind. It took a bit longer to convince the wife. We had just bought our first home. I was sort of in a pretty good place in my last career. I was earning the most I'd earned in ages, and things were looking pretty good, and I think it took her a bit by surprise. But after sort of half a week of convincing, and once I showed her around the farm and sweet-talked her into the pros and cons, then, yeah, we made the jump, and within 5 weeks I was working on the farm. So, yeah, it all happened pretty quick from once we made the decision.
And you did have a house in the city?
Yeah, well, we were living in Tauranga. We had just bought a house in Greaton, and I was working in the Mount. My wife's a nurse at Tauranga Hospital. She's still working there. Well, we just popped out a little kid, but she will be back working there again soon. I mean, I'm off at the moment. Like I said, just popped out a baby. And
well, thank you for coming along. What sort of baby? Well,
I'm happy to stay. We can keep this going for a couple of hours. What sort of baby? It's a Frisian cross. No, it's a little boy. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, no, he's pretty good, so we'll hopefully have him ready to help calving this time next year, maybe.
And why did you make the decision?
Why? So I always wanted to be a farmer. Loved the idea of it. But didn't really know we could. And then my wife's best mate, she's a dairy farmer, and I was talking to her dad, and he started talking about how there's sort of a shortage of staff in the industry and how there was actually opportunities to, you know, make a bit of money and work to the top. There's heaps of security, and I mean, it's a pretty good example. The job I had this time last year is now not a job. I was working with rugby teams in an international rugby academy when you can't bring players in at the moment, so that industry is going to really struggle for a little bit. So we're pretty stoked we made the call, because you know, we've been fine throughout this.
And there have been a few mentions there of money, so I think it's time to hear from the boss.
I'm Tim Mackle, Chief Executive of Dairy NZ. We're an industry good body for the dairy sector, and we're owned by farmers and we're funded by farmers, and we're there to help them really with a better future.
What about pay rates?
But they are fairly good. I mean, you can come in off the street, so to speak, and earn something in the 40,000 range and grow pretty quickly. And, you know, to become a herd manager, average is probably around 70. Larger herds getting upwards above that. And farm manager, six figures. And oftentimes what's worked into that is accommodation. The good thing about dairy farming, and maybe, you know, compared to some more extensive farming, is that a lot of farms are close to urban centres. And right now, you know, particularly centres like the Waikato, Canterbury, Otago, Southland are where a lot of the jobs are right now. And they actually correspond with some of the tourism jobs and hospitality jobs too. So I think there's a bit of a win-win there too, I think, Susan, with location.
And the career changes, what do they think?
Yeah, so going from a university degree, well-paid physiotherapy job to dairy farming, I think people that were most concerned with my parents that I was giving away this pretty good career that I had to go back to basically minimum wage. You're really lucky that on a farm you do have a lot of your needs in terms of housing and oftentimes food, meat and milk taken care of, so there is that offside. But it took a bit of getting used to. Fast forward a few years now, so this is my seventh year dairy farming. I'm well ahead of where I would have been had I'd stayed in physiotherapy. I'm my own boss. It's hard work, but you know, I can make it work around what else I've got going on.
For me, it's a no-brainer. This is probably the biggest gig I've had as a performing arts student, and I'm a dairy farmer. So, you know, there's not a huge opportunity in New Zealand for arts students to make money, and there are tons of people doing it. Yeah, I came here and I'd say I was making way more money than I would have been as an 18-year-old at the time, and I'm a 21-year-old in a three-bedroom house making decent living, good amount of savings. I'm really happy. I've got a life plan and I'm getting sort of more opportunity to be in leadership and stuff.
Just as a point to what Dana was saying, so Dana works for me on the farm. I don't know that there would be many places where someone in their second year of farming are pretty well overseeing what is a multi-million dollar operation. When I'm not here, Dana and Tim are responsible for the place. I just can't see any other major industries where that sort of responsibility is available if people want to take it. So, yeah.
The wife and I started talking about, obviously, what is the sort of next step is... I suppose there's a couple of options. You can go maybe that more traditional route, like the old school route, where you go and contract milk, maybe a smaller farm and work up from there. But at the moment, we're really loving working on a bigger farm with the team, and I don't see why there's not enough. I don't see why there's a reason you can't stay following that route more. And we really enjoy the fact you're actually working with other people, which is maybe something that in the past has scared people away from the industry. So at this point, that's what we're thinking, is stay on a big farm and managing a bigger farm at some point. And I think there's more and more of those opportunities popping up as farms get bigger.
Yeah, Tim and I are pretty much running the grazing plans and things like that. So I've gone from within half a year being a dairy assistant riding around to now knowing how to run most of the farm, and then management from here, and hopefully getting to own a farm one day.
The dairy sector is certainly hoping that comments like this will encourage some Kiwis out of work because of COVID-19 to look at a career change. There are 1,000 jobs going at present on dairy farms, and Dairy NZ's Tim Mackle says come June and July there will be more. In fact, by September, if work visas for the majority of the 5,000 migrant dairy workers aren't sorted out, there could be a flood of jobs. To help people think about a career change, Dairy NZ has relaunched its Go Dairy campaign.
As part of that, we're going to have a training program, and we kicked that off in June this year. And that's going to last a few weeks, and it will give, you know, some theory and some practical experience and some health and safety. That'll be a taster. We're also working with the government on that, and also on how we integrate people into that workforce. And we're going to team up with farmers, make sure that they have the right settings at their place to look after those workers as well. So it's going to be quite an integrated program. But look, mate, you know, no bones about it. At times it is hard work, there's no doubt about it, but it's extremely satisfying.
The support from the likes of Dairy NZ, the Dairy Women's Network, Primary ITO, the competitions that are involved in the dairy industry, like the Dairy Industry Awards. There are so many places where you can get a huge amount of support and knowledge to help grow on farm, basically.
Interview here as well. Oh, she's a career changer as well. She's come from sheep and beef, and now she's dairy farming.
How did she enjoy the change?
Took a bit of getting used to not being in a kennel all the time, I think, but she's definitely warmed up to it, I would say. I think she enjoys being able to lie in the sun for most of the day in between the small amount of work we get her to do on the dairy farm.
I guess that is one thing. You do have to like animals, don't you? It wouldn't be a job if you didn't have an affinity, do you think? Probably seems funny asking it, but...
Well, no, yeah. I don't think you'd meet a dairy farmer that said he didn't like cows. I mean, cows are pretty cool. They're characters in their own right, and you'd think we've got 1,000 cows here and how would you tell one from the other? But the number of cows that we've got named in the herd and their different sort of personalities, yeah, you get to know them and it's quite cool. The other thing is, it's not all animals. There's a lot of other parts to the farm that function outside of that. So there's a balance.
You can love heavy machinery as well and be pretty stoked to be farming. I don't know, yeah, it's definitely for me a passion for animals. I
To be honest, I don't know that much about cows before coming farming. I've always loved other animals. Didn't know a hell of a lot about cows. But, yeah, like Thomas said, since coming in, you find that they do have little personalities and some are a bit annoying. They won't walk onto the yard until you give them a little pad or a kiwi fruit or something like that, which can, you know, at 3:30 in the morning, sometimes you just want to hurry up. But at the same time, it makes it a bit, yeah, more unique. And also it changes that routine you're talking about. Like, because they're animals, it's not the same every day. And there's a lot of people say dairy farming is this production line type work and factory type work, but it's really not, because they're different every day.
To what extent did the image of dairying make you think twice, you two that have perhaps come more recently, because it has not had a good rap?
Yeah, I suppose I didn't think too much about it. You've obviously seen, like, you see the things in the media and, but I don't know, you always take that with a pinch of salt. You know, most of the stuff you see on there is going to be usually not the full story, and especially the stuff around dirty dairying and whatnot. Yeah, maybe something that didn't put me off coming, but I know it probably put other people off coming. They think that we're just killing the environment, and but I mean, go for a swim in the canal out there. It's not too shabby, so it's probably even.
Yeah, I don't. We're apparently the people that don't care about the environment, but I've never met someone who spends as much time outside and caring for pastures, animals, the environment. We have waterway agreements, everything, than dairy farmers. We're out here protecting it and doing what we can.
And a final piece of advice from one of the career changers.
Yeah, don't be afraid to give it a go. And then to make it super simple, go and talk to dairy farmers as well. I don't know a dairy farmer that wouldn't be happy to have a chat to someone interested in getting in the industry. Head up the tanker track, be polite, introduce yourself and ask if you can, you know, pick their brain for 10 minutes. I'm sure they'll say yes.
That was Thomas Chatfield. We also heard from Dana Rowe and Tim Wilson. In terms of finding jobs, Thomas says the Fonterra Fence Post website is a great resource. It's where he advertises all his jobs. The Dairy NZ course Tim Mackle was talking about is a farm-ready entry-level training course. It starts on June the 8th and is free to people who are serious about working on dairy farms. There is also provision for wages support for the first few weeks the new recruits are on the job, recognising that staff new to farming require support and supervision as they become familiar with the work. Inquiries about the course have already come in from people who have lost their jobs. They include a former fly fishing guide, someone in film and television, another in banking and finance, a couple of commercial pilots, a biologist, a welder, and people from construction and forestry. You can register your interest on the Dairy NZ website, and we'll put a link to it on the Country Life webpage, rnz.co.nz/countrylife.
Orton Bradley Park overlooks Charteris Bay, a large inlet on the southern coast of Lyttelton Harbour on Banks Peninsula. The park is a popular summer picnic spot, and it's also home to a small farm. Laura's Dairy is run by Laura Beck, who used to sell her milk to the local community. She doesn't anymore, and you'll find out why soon. But first, she tells Cosmo about the history of the park.
We sit under Te Ahu Pātiki, the maunga up there, and Te Whārau, the stream, runs through it. To my embarrassment, I don't know whose rohi it's in, but the Bradley family got possession and use of it quite a while ago. And Orton Bradley was the last Bradley to farm it, and he didn't have children, and he was probably one of New Zealand's first environmentalists. He was seeing how all the deforestation started eroding the hills and started planting trees. And he bequeathed this farm to the people of New Zealand. So that was set up under a piece of legislation, and there's a governing group who govern the park under that act of legislation.
It must be quite satisfying for you to be continuing the farming tradition on this land.
It's a real privilege, and it's really interesting reading back on his stories to see when he planted his spuds. And yeah, farming's got such a short history in New Zealand, but it's really nice to be part of that history.
Is it good land?
It's not great land for dairying. You can need a bit lusher soil and more rainfall. It's all right. It's loose, blown soil on top of Barry's Blay clay. So it gets pretty wet in the winter and pretty dry in the summer. So the park is about 600 hectares, and some of it is parkland and recreational. And I farm 22 hectares, yeah.
So you lease the land off the park?
Yeah, that's correct, I lease the land.
How did that come about? How did you manage to convince them that you'd like to use some of their land?
I think it was really good timing. The park manager, Ian, was really empathetic to the idea of running a dairy. So I just put a proposal together. I had support of the manager and I went to the board and they were convinced. And it's a small chunk of their land for me to experiment with, so I guess it wasn't too big a risk for them. And I think they enjoyed the aspect of having a bit more community engagement in the park as well.
Mm. Have you got land on both sides of the road?
Yeah, so those stock over there are mine as well, and then I've got another small piece of land a bit further down the road.
What made you want to start a dairy farm here, a small dairy farm?
I'd been living in the community for a couple of years, and for me, farming in a community that I know is really important. So having a sense of connection to the people that I was hoping to farm for was fundamental, and this land was available and it's a beautiful spot.
Mm.
So it felt like the path of least resistance, really, and felt like the right thing to be doing.
What were you doing before you leased this land?
I was working for ECAN. I was a facilitator in the Canterbury Water Management Strategy for two regions. And previous to that, I'd done about 10 years organic market gardening and working on a mixed farm with beef as well.
Okay, so coming here was going back to what you've been doing for years?
Yeah, pretty much. I've been farming and growing for 15 years, a little bit on dairy farms as well. So I felt like I had enough information to know to know what questions to ask if I needed to, yeah.
Did you live on a farm as a child? What was your background?
I grew up in Auckland, yeah, so very much from the city, yeah. And then I studied at Victoria, did a law and arts degree, and then I worked in Parliament, and then I went overseas for a bit, and then came back to learn how to grow food.
We're in your farmyard here, and behind us is where you used to milk your cows, and you don't do that anymore, do you?
No, I stopped about a season or so ago, yeah.
Why did you stop milking the cows?
The main reason was the new raw milk regulations that came through. I tried to work with them for a couple of years, but the biggest issue with that was the real restriction of market access. So, you know, when they came through, I lost 50% of my income overnight. You know, no one's going to drive an hour and a half to pick up 2 litres of milk. And it requires us to drop off milk to every individual customer. And for me, that was logistically prohibitive and financially prohibitive. And I think the challenge as well is our compliance costs went up to about 10, 12 grand. And so we're milking to really high food standards, but still not be able to access our market easily. And I got really tired, so I stopped, yeah.
Why do you think they brought in these new measures?
There was nothing regulating the sale of raw milk, so I really think something needed to happen. And most of the raw milk providers were really happy for improvements in food safety and all of that, so we're all on an equal playing field. We weren't expecting such strict access requirements, and I think a lot of that is based around the fear of raw milk and how bad it used to be when there was rife with TB and things like that. But really our hygiene and our practices have improved so much, and it was a shame that the regulations didn't reflect that. So I tried to work with that for a few years, but it's just me doing everything. And it got too much.
Mm. Would you like to milk cows again one day, or have you had enough?
I really love milking cows. There's a real certain intimacy that you get from waking up early in the morning and seeing the moon set or rise and walking in with the animals and, you know, being with them every day. So I'd love to do it again in the future, but maybe in a different setup where there weren't so many challenges.
What sort of changes would you like to see brought in that makes it easier for people like yourself to be able to sell raw milk?
Oh, I think the key one is market access. You know, I don't know if there are any other food producers who have to deliver their food directly to the customer, except COVID-19 excepted. So being able to have better access, even if it's what people were doing was having their milk going to a fridge in a health food store, people were prepaying and pre-ordered. So that's the system that I was operating in. It was really safe. And so something as simple as that, where you still have the same food safety requirements, would enable it immensely.
Mm.
And somehow a reduction in compliance costs. You know, when you're milking 10 cows and you're spending 10, 12 grand on compliance, it's a lot of money. And there's no sort of sliding scale depending on how many animals you're milking. So some empathy around that would be helpful too.
I guess another option is to pasteurise your milk.
Yeah, that is absolutely an option, and my market would absolutely increase if I did that. But for me, I love having a living product, and I'm working with a soil, so I'm trying to enhance the soil biology, and the microbiology in the gut of the cow is a reflection of that too, and that transfers into the milk. And I think it's such a beautiful product when you have a living milk, and it's delicious. So it would take quite a bit for me to pasteurise it, but yeah, if I had to, then I would, yeah.
As you've mentioned, we can see your cattle down towards the water. What are you doing with them now? Are they beef stock?
Yeah, so over the last couple of years I used an Angus and a Hereford bull over my cows just so I could have a semi-decent beef herd. And at the moment I'm just running beef, and that covers the overheads of the farm. Yeah, It's kind of a holding pattern really till I unfold a bit and work out what my next steps are.
Now we are walking down a track past a ploughed paddock. What's going in here?
I'm just wanting to set up a pretty small and local community garden. I've been kind of ruminating for a couple of months about it, and just feels like the right time. It's the right climate where people have got their heads up and wanting to have sort of greater food security. And I'd really love to work with more people who love to grow food for themselves and for each other. So we'd be looking at growing some larger crops which people don't have enough room for. Yes. Pumpkin and corn. Really want to grow some kumara, maybe some spuds.
Now we've come to a gate that opens into a paddock where some of the younger stock are, and there's a fantail flitting around, enjoying the sun.
Yeah, we've got heaps of them at the moment.
Tell me about these animals here.
Yeah, so these are... we've only got four animals in front of us at the moment, and they're from a young herd of 12 young stock. So they were born in spring, most of them from my cows, and a few of the ones that I bought in and weaned on to their mums. So I weaned them, you know, we had such a dry summer and autumn, so I weaned them earlier than I would have hoped, but they're doing pretty well. And I've got a few replacement dairy cows in here, but mostly they're a Hereford Cross beefies. Yeah.
So how long will they stay here before they're culled?
It all depends how well they put on weight, really. It's going to be a pretty tight winter, but 2 or 3 years old, hoping to get them up to size. Yeah, it's an interesting balance, really, between numbers and feed. And yeah, I had a bit of a relaxed year last year with regards to farming, so this year I'm going to be a bit more on top of my pasture management and trying to get these guys to grow as fast as they can.
In terms of profitability, is rearing beef cattle good business?
Not on this scale, I don't think. That's what's challenging about running a small farm. You've got economy of scales that don't quite cut it. So, yeah, scraping through right now.
Now we are following the cattle up the hill. They're not too concerned about us, are they?
Oh no, they're pretty relaxed, and there's public walking paths through here as well, so they get access to humans quite a bit.
There are some plants dotted around with bluey purple flowers. What are they?
Oh, chicory, yeah. I always like to let a few of them go to seed as well to try and reseed the paddock for next season. So this is a mixed sward that I put in a couple of years ago. A couple of different clovers, chicory and plantain, and coxfoot, timothy, and tall fescue. I was really interested in getting deeper rooting species and a diverse lay, so my animals had a whole lot of different nutritious feed and it was more resilient in dry weather. And it's really worked. I've improved how much dry matter I get off the property by 3 times or so. And so when you're, you know, trying to milk a small herd and run beef, the more you can grow, the better, really.
Now, from this paddock here, we've got an even better view of the gorgeous Littleton Harbour.
Yeah, lucky, right? Yeah, it's a real privilege to farm these animals and in such a gorgeous place.
So you've mentioned the community garden that you've started to make by ploughing the land. What other plans have you got for this farm?
I don't know yet. I really hit the wall and I'm still unfolding from the challenges that I was working through. So, I mean, my ideal is that I have a really diverse food source for the community and the community's more integrated and growing here. I don't know what the economic picture would look like and how those social structures would work, but I'd love to be growing, you know, chickens and eggs and more fruit and nut trees and pigs. There's nothing like free-range pork. Yeah, so, I mean, that's my picture. And I started the dairy farm because I thought it was a really good fertility cornerstone and economic cornerstone to build that diversity from. And I love the idea of a village farm where we love to grow food for ourselves, and I love the social and cultural structure that could enable. Yeah, I mean, I think growing should be fun and easy, and connecting with the rhythms of nature on a communal scale is a really heartfelt thing to do. Yeah.
Now a heifer has come right up to us. I'm not sure if she wants a scratch or if she's just inquisitive.
Inquisitive. This is Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Yeah, she's one of the calves that I brought in.
Can you tell me the names of all the calves in this paddock?
Yeah, I can. And they've got their name tags on their ear. Their names are written on it there.
So who are they?
Oh, well, this is Sprite. His mum was a beautiful cow called Bronwyn. This is Rue. Her mum is Ruby. Jersey Cross. Do you want me to go through all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We've got down the back is Tom. Then we've got David. You know, these were big, strong calves, so I wanted to give them big, strong names. That big, beautiful fellow down the back's called Tennyson because he was born near the tennis courts. Then there's Whiskey, a friend of mine named him. There's Mo. There's Macy. There's Melissa. That's almost all of them, is it? I think I've missed out a few.
I'm giving Macy a scratch on the back of her head. And she's got a bit of white behind each of her ears, but she's mainly black.
Yeah, you're told never to have pets on a farm, but I think she's going to have to be my forever cow. She's endeared herself to so many people who come here. I can't get rid of her. So she might be a beef mama.
Do you do home kill on the property here?
I do home kill just for me and my family. And occasionally there'll be someone who will purchase an animal a couple of months in advance, and then they're involved in the day-to-day management of the animal, and that's when it's possible to home kill as well. Mm. That's my ideal, is to home kill all my animals. And it's so important for me to honour and respect the animal as much as possible and to reduce as much stress in their life. And when you can kill them on the paddock, they haven't had to travel for a day, hang out for a day in the yards and then go to the abattoir is just the ideal. So I did one recently, and I've been able to, we're getting all the bones back for broths and soups, getting all the fat back. I'm using the suet to render down for tallow and moisturiser. Dogs are eating the organs that we don't eat, and yeah, it feels really good to use as much of the animal as possible. Yeah.
Do you bury what you can't use on the farm?
Yeah, so I've buried their heads, and I'm going to plant a tree over them. And I love that idea that, you know, these animals do emit methane, climate gases in their life, so being able to plant a tree over them helps to mitigate that to a degree. And I think for me the intention of burying an animal felt, I just did that the other day, felt really ceremonial and wholesome, and acknowledging the lives of these beautiful creatures felt really right to me. So I love the idea of having a small forest of graveyard trees.
Mm.
Yeah.
Honouring those animals that are giving you meat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anyone who's worked with cattle knows how gentle and heartfelt and, you know, such gorgeous creatures. And I think taking their life is a really, really big decision to make. So doing what we can to honour them while they're alive, and when they're dead, I just holding that ritual around meat, I think, is really important. Stops us from being too greedy and too wasteful. Yeah.
At the same time, you must feel quite sad because, as we've mentioned, you get to know these cattle really well.
Yep, and it's the worst day on the farm when I have to have a home kill. But I think having a bit of sorrow when you eat your meat is okay. You know, for me it informs me on how to look after them as best as possible and instructs me not to waste a mouthful. And it manages my meat intake too. You know, I don't gorge myself on it anymore because I know how, you know, beautiful and precious these animals are.
Laura back there talking to Cosmo in a paddock at her Charteris Bay farm on Banks Peninsula. And that's it for Country Life this week. If you'd like to get in touch, please do. We're on email country@rnz.co.nz. Catch you next week.
Bye now.